All right, let's dive into this deep dive all about wine science. Looks like you've been hitting the books, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot here.
I mean, we've got academic papers, ebooks, even some classic wine guides, lots on primary fermentation. You really want to get to the bottom of what makes yeast happy. And you know how to make sure that fermentation goes off without a hitch.
That's where the magic happens, for sure.
I know, right? But it's not just magic, is it? There's science behind it all, too.
Oh, absolutely. It's a whole blend of art and science, you know?
Definitely. And I was prepping for this, and I found something so cool. So get this. Did you know that like the shape of a grape seed, like the actual shape, can change the color of the wine?
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, it's all about the surface area.
Makes sense. How it interacts with the juice.
It's exactly crazy. Right. But okay, before we get too deep into like the yeast party down there, let's back up a sec. You're interested in the whole shebang, starting with the grapes themselves. So what are the big things we got to understand about grape biology, viticulture, all that jazz, to set ourselves up for a successful fermentation?
Well, you got to think of it like the foundation of a house. If you start with shaky ground, the whole thing's going to be a mess. So, the grapevine itself, how it grows, that's key. Things like terroir, the climate, soil, the sunlight, all that gives each vineyard its own unique
It's
character
like a fingerprint, right?
for the wine.
Exactly. But it goes beyond the environment too. Vineyard management, super important. Like how the vines are pruned, how they're trained, that changes how much sunlight hits the grapes, which then impacts sugar development and, how much alcohol you can potentially get in the wine.
So the winemakers are shaping things way before the grapes even leave the vineyard.
Oh yeah, for sure. Every choice they make affects everything. The aromas, the flavor, the structure of the wine, how well it ages, all that. It's wild how much thought goes into all this. And speaking of shaping the wine, what about rootstocks? I know they're big for the vine's health, keep it strong, but how do they fit into this whole fermentation thing?
Rootstocks are like the unsung heroes, seriously. They're the base that the whole grapevine grows from, and they can do some crazy things. For instance, if you've got a short growing season, you gotta pick a rootstock that's gonna make those grapes ripen faster. It can make or break a whole harvest.
Wow. Like you're giving the grapes a head start. I like it. And what about the soil itself? All those nutrients, do they matter for fermentation?
Soil. Oh man, it's a whole world down there, a whole ecosystem. The balance is super important. Healthy vines, good grapes, everything's gotta be right. Like potassium, that's key for the sugar in the grapes, which, duh, we need for fermentation. But too much phosphorus, that messes with how much potassium the vine can even take up, throws the whole balance
You
off.
got to find that sweet spot.
Exactly. The right nutrients, the right amount, and all that care pays off big time when it comes to fermentation.
Okay, so picture this. Amazing grapes, perfectly grown, packed with sugar, ready to go. And now enter the yeast. Time for these little guys to shine.
You got it. They're the heart of fermentation, the little engine that turns sugar into alcohol. Makes the magic happen.
The yeast party. But I was reading, and there's so much that affects how well these little guys work, how healthy they are, all those factors. Can we break it down? What do we need to know to keep those yeast cells happy and, pumping out that alcohol?
Well, let's start with the basics. Sugar. They gotta have sugar to make alcohol. But it's not as simple as just giving them tons of it. You gotta find the right balance.
Okay, tell me more.
Too much sugar. That can actually stress the yeast out, slow down fermentation, or even like completely stop it. It's like asking them to run a marathon without any training.
Poor little yeast cells. So
Yeah.
how do they figure out how much is just right?
Winemakers are constantly measuring the sugar in the grape juice. It's called must, by the way. And sometimes they even adjust it if they need to. There are special tools for that, making sure the conditions are perfect for the yeast.
Like setting up the perfect playground for them. So sugar's important. What else? Temperature, right?
Temperature. Oh man, that's huge. Think of yeast like little athletes training for a big game. They've got an ideal temperature range where they do their best. Too cold, they slow down. Too hot, they get all stressed out and might even die off.
Gotta find that sweet spot again,
You
right?
got it. Not too hot, not too cold, just right. Winemakers use all sorts of tricks to keep things perfect. Temperature-controlled tanks, cellars, they're always watching, always adjusting. Gotta keep those yeast happy.
Speaking of keeping them happy, what about nitrogen? Why is that so important?
Think of nitrogen as like their protein shake. It's what they need to grow and multiply, and to make those special enzymes that turn sugar into alcohol.
So if there's not enough nitrogen, the yeast can't do its thing.
Exactly. That's why winemakers check the levels before fermentation starts. If it's too low, they can add some more, like diammonium phosphate. It's like a little boost for the yeast.
A little pick-me-up. Nice.
Yeah.
And what about acidity? I know that pH stuff matters in winemaking. How does that affect the yeast?
Yeast loves a slightly acidic environment. It's where they thrive. If the pH is too high, it can mess with their growth and make fermentation sluggish. And if it's too low, well, that can stress them out too, create some off flavors in the wine.
Yeah, so balance is key, like with everything else.
You got it. Keep those little yeast cells comfy and doing their thing.
Makes sense. And another thing I was reading about was sulfur dioxide, SO2, right?
Yeah, that's the one.
I know it helps preserve wine, but how's it connected to the yeast?
SO2 wears a couple of hats, actually. It's an antioxidant, so it protects the wine, but it's also antimicrobial, so it can actually stop some unwanted bacteria and wild yeasts from growing. You know, the ones that could mess with our little star players.
So it's like clearing the field for them, making sure they have everything they need and nothing to get in their way.
Exactly. It's all about controlling the environment, making sure fermentation goes smoothly and predictably.
Okay, so listening to all this, I'm starting to see just how many moving parts there are in fermentation. It's like a delicate dance. Gotta get everything just right. What happens when things go wrong? What are some of the things that can mess up fermentation, and what do winemakers do to fix it?
One common one is a stuck fermentation, or sluggish. It's when the yeast just isn't converting sugar into alcohol as well as it should. It's like they hit a wall.
And why does that happen?
Lots of reasons, actually. Could be not enough nutrients, or the temperature's off, or there might even be some stuff in there that's stopping the yeast from working properly, like trying to bake a cake and forgetting the flour. It's just not going to rise right.
So, what do they do to get things back on track?
Well, it depends on what caused the problem in the first place. If it's nutrients, they might add some more. Temperature. Adjust that. And if there's something in there that's messing things up, they might have to use a specific type of yeast that can handle it better.
Like they're playing detective.
Exactly. Figuring out what's wrong and how to fix it.
It's fascinating. Before we move on, I gotta ask about wild yeasts. They can cause problems, right? But can they ever be a good thing?
Oh, that's a great question. So wild yeasts, they're already in the vineyard naturally. They can add some really interesting layers to the wine, make it unique. But they can also be a bit unpredictable. Sometimes they create flavors you don't want. It's a bit of a gamble. Some winemakers love them. Others stick to the tried and true yeast strains. It's all about style.
Like choosing between a paintbrush and a spray can. Different ways to create.
Love that. It's all about the winemaker's vision, what they're trying to achieve.
So I think we've covered a lot of ground here. The grapes, the vineyard, what yeast needs to thrive. It's a lot.
We've just scratched the surface.
I know, right? But we've laid a good foundation. And there's so much more to explore when it comes to fermentation.
Totally. It's a complex process, but fascinating.
Well, in the next part of our deep dive, we'll keep going. We'll get even deeper into primary fermentation, look at some of the challenges, how winemakers troubleshoot, all that good stuff.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. But for now, let's take a breather and let all this sink in.
It's amazing, isn't it, how these tiny little yeast cells can make such a difference in the end.
I know, right? They're like the, I don't know, the conductors of the flavor orchestra or something,
Yep.
shaping the wine's whole personality.
I like that. Conductors of flavor. But speaking of shaping the wine, what about when things, you know, don't quite go according to plan? What are some of the hiccups that can happen during this primary fermentation?
Well, we talked about those stuck fermentations earlier, where things just kind of stall out. Seems like that's a pretty common problem. What else can go wrong?
One thing you got to watch out for is volatile acidity,
Yeah.
VA for short.
VA. Okay.
Yeah, it's when you get the certain bacteria, acetic acid bacteria, and they get a little too enthusiastic, let's say. Start producing way too much acetic acid.
Oh, right. Acetic acid, that's vinegar, right?
Bingo. And you definitely don't want a vinegary wine, trust me.
No, I think I'll pass on that. So a VA spike, not good. How did they stop that from happening? Is it another one of those balance things?
Balance is always key. With VA, it's all about managing oxygen. Those acetic acid bacteria, they need oxygen to do their thing. So winemakers, they try to keep oxygen exposure to a minimum. During fermentation, storage, the whole nine yards, like creating a low oxygen workout zone for the yeast while keeping those bacteria away.
Clever. And pH comes into play here too, right? We talked about how yeast likes it a little acidic.
Exactly. Acetic acid bacteria, they like it less acidic. So keeping the pH lower, where the yeast is happy, can help keep those bacteria in check.
It's like every little thing is connected to everything else.
It really is, like an ecosystem. Got to keep everything in harmony. Speaking of ecosystems, remember those wild yeasts? We talked about how they can add complexity, but they can also cause some trouble.
Oh yeah, the wild card. Always keeps things interesting.
For sure. And one thing they can do is produce too much hydrogen sulfide.
Hydrogen sulfide? Isn't that like rotten egg smell?
Ding, ding, ding. And it can definitely stink up a wine, gives it a really unpleasant sulfur smell. Not good.
Definitely not what you want in your glass. So how do they deal with that?
Well, the best way is to prevent it in the first place. Using a specific yeast strain can help outcompete those wild guys. Less chance of hydrogen sulfide.
Give a good guy's a head start. I like it. But what if it happens anyway?
There are ways to fix it. Sometimes they add copper sulfate. It binds to the hydrogen sulfide and basically removes it from the wine.
Like a little cleanup crew.
Yeah.
Neutralizes the stink bomb. Nice. And speaking of smells you don't want, have you ever heard of Brettanomyces? Or Brett, as the cool kids call it.
Ah, Brett. Yes. That's a tricky one.
It's that yeast that can make the wine smell like a barnyard, right?
Yeah.
Or horses.
You got it. Brett can produce all sorts of funky compounds. Barnyard, leather, even like a Band-Aid. Not exactly appealing.
No, thank you. So how do they deal with Brett? Can you even get rid of it once it's there?
Brett is a tough one. It's a survivor. The best thing is to try to prevent it altogether.
Yeah.
Super clean winery, keep a close eye on the wine as it's fermenting, all that.
Like a spotless kitchen, right? Keep those unwanted guests out.
Exactly. And if it does show up, there are some things they can do. Filtration, sulfur dioxide, but sometimes it's a real battle.
Wow. This whole fermentation thing, it's like a delicate balancing act, isn't it? So many things to think about.
Absolutely. It's a blend of science and, you know, a little bit of intuition.
Speaking of intuition, how do winemakers even know when primary fermentation is done? Is there like a timer, a secret signal?
Huh. No secret handshake, but there are ways to tell. They keep track of the sugar levels. Once most of the sugar's been turned into alcohol, you're pretty much there.
So they're basically checking if the yeast has finished eating.
That's a good way to put it. And they have tools to measure it precisely. But sometimes you can even just tell by looking. The bubbling and frothing slows way down when the yeast is done.
The party's over?
Exactly. Everyone's heading home. And once primary fermentation is done, the wine is ready for the next phase. More transformations, more refinement. It's a journey.
I can't wait to hear about what happens next. But I think we've covered a lot about this primary fermentation, all those factors that make the yeast happy, and what can go wrong. It's really interesting.
Definitely. Lots of challenges. But that's part of what makes winemaking so cool, right?
Absolutely. And now it's time to see what happens after the party's over. What comes next in the winemaking adventure? All right, so we've made it through primary fermentation. The yeast has done its thing, turning all that sugar into alcohol. We've got this this amazing liquid. It's on its way to becoming wine, but we're not quite there yet, right?
Oh, no, not even close. There's still a lot to do. Think of it like we've composed the melody. Now we've got to arrange it, fine-tune the instruments. Let the music mature.
I love that. Okay, so what are some of the things that happen after primary fermentation? You know, to really polish that melody, make the wine the best it can be.
Well, the first thing usually is racking.
Racking.
Yeah, it means transferring the wine from one container to another, leaving behind any sediment that's settled at the bottom.
Ah, okay. So that's how they get it so clear.
Yeah.
Like decanting, but on a bigger scale.
Exactly. Gets rid of anything that could cloud it up, make it taste funny. And sometimes they'll do fining too.
Fining?
Yeah. It's when they add something to the wine to help remove any haze.
So like a spa treatment for the wine.
Kind of, yeah. They use different stuff, clay, egg whites, even gelatin. They grab onto those tiny particles and drag them down to the bottom. Then you can just get rid of them.
Wow, it's amazing what they do. And what about filtration? Is that another way to clarify the wine?
Oh, yeah. Filtration is kind of like fining's more high-tech cousin. They pass the wine through a filter, and it traps any remaining particles.
So it's like a final polish before it goes into the bottle.
Exactly. You want it perfectly clear and stable. Filtration gets rid of anything that could make it cloudy later on or change the flavor.
Like a final quality check.
Yeah.
Making sure it's perfect.
You got it. And then, yeah, it's time for the bottle. But before that, some wines, especially reds, might need some aging.
Ah, aging. That's where things get really interesting. I know that mellows out the tannins, right?
Yeah.
And gives you those really complex flavors.
Absolutely. Aging is like letting the wine tell its story. Over time, everything in the wine interacts and integrates, creates a more balanced, harmonious flavor.
And oak barrels, I've heard those can add a lot to the flavor. Vanilla, spice, all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Oak can do amazing things. Depending on the type of oak, how old the barrel is, how long the wine stays in there, you can get a whole symphony of flavors.
So the winemaker gets to choose, right? What kind of barrel, how long to age it, to create the exact flavor they want.
Exactly. It's like choosing the perfect frame for a painting. It completes the whole picture.
This whole deep dive has been amazing. It's incredible how much work goes into making a bottle of wine. Every little detail matters.
It's a true craft, an art form, really. And as you can see, there are so many factors that influence the final product. The grapes themselves, the terroir, the winemaking techniques, how long it's aged. It all comes together to create something unique.
And thinking back to what our listener was interested in, primary fermentation, it's really cool to see how those early decisions, about the yeast and the fermentation process, they can have such a huge impact on the whole journey.
Absolutely. Every choice has consequences down the line. It's like a chain reaction.
Well, I think we've given our listener a lot to think about. From those tiny yeast cells to the art of aging, there's so much to discover in a bottle of wine.
Definitely. Cheers to that. And to all the amazing winemakers out there who make it all happen.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. I hope you enjoyed it. And the next time you open a bottle of wine, take a minute to really savor it. Think about all the work, the science, the art that went into creating it.